Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Monday, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, where Colin's right and where Colin is wrong, there is plenty of both. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, America. Thanks for tuning in. I love Mondays during the football season. So many things to talk about. And let's start with the Dallas Cowboys. They are the sports car in the showroom. They are great for your fantasy football team. They're pretty to watch. They got the star running back and the young star quarterbacks getting better, and the offensive line is unbelievable, and the star on the helmet. And yet they're 6-4 and struggled with Jeff Driscoll, and they have lost to the three current playoff teams they have faced: Vikings, Saints, and Green Bay. What are we to do? They are pretty, though. 8-for-14 on third down, one time of possession, 434 yards passing, 26 first downs. Folks, they have a hole. It's called coaching. Everybody over the last 2 years has gotten better, except the coaching. You know what they are? They're the Golden State Warriors with Mark Jackson. They need a turbo boost, and they got it with Steve Kerr. It wasn't that Mark Jackson failed. The defense was very good. They were shiny and pretty and fun, and they had shooters and they had talent, and they won a playoff series. And it was not an easy move to make, because Mark Jackson won, and Mark Jackson got to the playoffs and won, and the players liked him, and Steve Kerr had never been an NBA head coach. But in the end, you had to make the move. It's just like a CEO of a company who has a product, and it's a really, really, really good product, and it's selling. But you're like, my sales manager, we should be better than this. The product's better than the results. And it's 6-4, struggling to beat Jeff Driscoll. With a quarterback in Dak Prescott that is getting better every week. Let's stop arguing. He's getting $35 million. Get over it. Zeke, star, offensive line. Generally in the NFL, your Super Bowl ceiling, there's three things that just knock you out. Our quarterback stinks. Not an issue. Our offensive line just can't hold up. Not their issue. Our defense is god-awful. No, they have the number one ranked offense, number two ranked offensive line, and the number seventh ranked defense. Folks, we got a hole. It's a coaching. Everything's getting better around Dallas, except the coaching. And by the way, my wife used to work in HR. She said firing people's easy, because everybody that gets fired knows they're getting fired. In all the years she did it, she said you'd never go to somebody and you go, I have to let you go. And they'd go, what? They'd always be like, yeah, I know. I'm not really focused right now. I've got personal issues. This is a tough one, though. Mark Jackson was a tough one. He was winning. Players liked him. Steve Kerr never coached. This is a tough one. He's winning. Players like him. They play hard. Players get better. I mean, their player development's excellent. But they need a turbo boost. And the turbo boost is probably Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. I mean, even Zeke after the game last night, even Zeke acknowledges he's seeing, obviously he plays on the team, but we've been telling you for 3 weeks, anybody notice Dak now? He's like Tom Brady or Russell Wilson. He's pointing guys out. He's calling the blitz. He's audibling at the line. It took 3 to 4 years to get here like Russell Wilson, but Zeke said it last night. Like, it's his team now, Dak's.
Dak's playing the best football I've ever seen him play. You know, it's definitely took his game to a next level, just the things he's been able to do. Coming up to a line, changing plays, getting us in the right place versus certain looks. And, you know, everyone came out and played really well today. You know, when everyone's contributing like that, we're hard to stop.
So this is the Mark Jackson Warrior story. It really is. It's not an easy one. HR walks up, we got to let you go. Most people know it. Mark Jackson's like, what? I'm winning. Players like me. Who are you going to hire? And I think there's some of that with Jason Garrett. But you're watching how much better Dak is getting. And yet they're 6-4 and are struggling to a backup with the Detroit Lions we got an issue. And it's going to be tough. And some of the players will be upset. But I've seen everybody for 2 years get better on this team. The coaching's not getting any better. All right, let's shift gears. Of all the Tom Bradys, the best Tom Brady is the holding the trophy Tom Brady. The second best Brady is grumpy Tom Brady. And Tom Brady was grumpy last night after the Patriots, now 9-1, went on the road. And the offense, let's be honest, is hard to watch.
Up and down, that's what it looks like to me. So, yeah, we'd probably do everything better.
Are you concerned about the offense, or you feel like it's something that's going to work its way out?
I don't think it matters what I think. It matters what we do.
Grumpy Tom Brady. They're 9-1. And here's the thing. This morning, if I said Patriots or the field in the AFC, the only part of the field you trust is Baltimore. That is it. Look at the rest of the field. Indianapolis, Kansas City can't stop the run. Buffalo and Houston, the teams that aren't in but could be. Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Oakland. I got an A-plus coach. I got an A quarterback. I got an A-plus defense. I got A-plus experience. And they're going to be playing in Foxborough if Baltimore and New England playoffs start today. Foxborough, 11 degrees, really windy. Who's got the experience edge? And who's really good the second time they face you? Yes, it's not pretty, but Isaiah Wynn comes back to left tackle. That's their weak spot on the team. He's coming back. The receivers are mostly outside of Edelman, young. They're getting better. Tom Brady talked about it this morning, and you could have taken this bite the last 6 years out of New England. This has been the story for 6 years in New England. Here's Tom this morning.
The strength of our team is our defense and our special teams. So on offense, you know, we got to take advantage when we get opportunities and, you know, understand that where our strengths lie and try to play to them. You know, not give any short fields and not turn the ball over and try to take advantage when we get into the red area to score touchdowns. And that's kind of where our offense is. That's kind of where our team is.
That's what it's been for years. It's week 11. They're looking for a little more efficiency on offense. They're getting better at left tackle. They just went on the road, and they won by a touchdown against a talented team. This is New England week 11. Ask yourself this morning, look around the AFC. The only team, AFC field or New England, the only team that makes you pause on that. I mean, you really think Oakland, Buffalo, Houston, Kansas City, Indianapolis is going to Foxborough in January and winning? Really? One chance to keep them out of the Super Bowl is Baltimore, and it'll be Belichick's second crack at him. I mean, I look at this team yesterday, and I'm like, yeah, they're sluggish. They figured out a way to win. I mean, outside of the Baltimore Ravens in the NFL right now, and they are hot, they're healthy, and they're humming. Outside of that one team, and Belichick gets a second crack, who else is going to Foxborough in this league and winning in January? I don't see it. I mean, if that's a bad experience, 9-1, Dallas next, who you got? I don't know. What's the line this morning on the Dallas game? Who you got, Dallas or New England in Foxborough? I think I'd take New England.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Sometimes you have to look to what I call look through the other end of the telescope on stories. I try never to be too rigid on a story because sometimes you just get so rigid and you see the world one way and you turn the telescope around and you're like, oh my God, there's a whole new world. And so I want you to remember this. Of the top 10 quarterbacks in the MVP race. One was a top 10 pick. And Patrick Mahomes wasn't initially a top 10 pick. Kansas City moved up to get him. I also want you to remember this. Of the 25 richest quarterbacks in league history, none made their money with their first contract. Don't pull your money out of a 401k. That's short-term thinking. Tua got hurt for Alabama. That's the best thing that ever happened to him as long as the surgery goes well, and we suspect it will, because Tua's going to drop a little in the first round. The best thing that happened to Dan Marino, he dropped to Don Shula, and Aaron Rodgers dropped to stable Green Bay, and Dak dropped to the best offensive line in football. and Russell Wilson dropped to Pete Carroll. Folks, Tua's a smaller quarterback. Joy and I have said this. We worry about the injury thing. So do you want him to go to Cincinnati and that offensive line and that owner and that roster? Do you want him to go to Miami? Do you want him to go to some of these clown shows in the NFL? Or do you want him to drop out of the top 10 and make his real money in his second, third, and fourth contract, because that's where all the guys make their money? And do you want him to go to Carolina at 18th and he can hand the ball to Christian McCaffrey, or the Chargers at 12th and he can hand the ball to those backs and has that defense, or Indianapolis at 22nd? Can you imagine inheriting that offensive line and that GM and Darius Leonard and that defense? Yes, Tua's probably going to drop in the draft, and zero of the 25 richest quarterbacks made their money in the first contract. You make your money in this league by the second, third, and fourth contract, and you may have all the talent in the world, but Josh Rosen was basically given six games, and the league bailed on him. And Mitch Trubisky, you're gone. This league bails on quarterbacks. Do you not think it helps Lamar Jackson? I hear people complaining about where Lamar Jackson got picked. Are you kidding me? I can go to Buffalo, I can go to Arizona, or I can go to Baltimore and John Harbaugh, and you're whining about where Lamar Jackson... That's the greatest thing that ever happened to Lamar Jackson. You think Lamar Jackson would duplicate this in Cincinnati? You're out of your gourd. You think Deshaun Watson inherited all those weapons, that defense... Now, it hasn't been perfect for Deshaun, but people are getting into this Tua thing. He's going to drop in the draft. If I had a son who was a little smaller at his position in the NFL quarterback, and it had a series of kind of injuries, and you ask me, Dad, where do you want him to end up? And I'd say, you know what I'd really like? I'd like him to go somewhere between 11 to 26 with a decent offensive line, a nice roster, a top running back, where he doesn't have to be a savior like Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, where he can go in, learn the offense, veteran head coach. I'd rather have the offensive line in Frank Reich in Indianapolis. I'd rather have the Chargers roster or Ron Rivera and Christian McCaffrey and make a little less money now and not be a savior. So I looked at Tua and I'm like, as long as this surgery, you know, is completed and he's healthy, and I think, you know, all indications are he will be, the new reality for quarterbacks is you don't want to be a savior. You're not making your money in your first quarter. You're going to tell me Baker Mayfield wouldn't be better today if he didn't inherit that situation and Baker Mayfield went to Baltimore? I got news for you. If Baker Mayfield was in Baltimore, he's not Lamar Jackson, but he'd be going to the playoffs. You cannot overcome dysfunction. And at the top of these drafts is nothing but dysfunction. Year after year, it's this. How many times is Miami going to draft in the top 10? How many times is Cincinnati going to draft in the top 10? The Jets going to draft in the top 10?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
13 years, an icon, a star, four Pro Bowls. Michael Vick joining us here on a Monday to talk some Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. You know, I want to start with something. I was saying, if I had a son and my son was a little smaller and played quarterback and he'd had two or three injuries, and I'm a dad, and I'm sitting there and thinking, I wouldn't say it publicly,
yeah,
but I'd be like, I got to be honest, I'd love you to fall to the Chargers or Carolina, stable coaches.
Sounds good.
You know, everybody's like, make your money now. But, Mike, none of you guys at quarterback make your money in your first contract. You make it in your second, third, and fourth.
Yeah.
So let me talk about Tua. In a weird way, smaller at the position, banged up, could you make an argument slipping about seven spots in the draft is a silver lining?
Well, I think you can make the comparison to what happened to Lamar. Lamar could have easily went early in the draft and ended up on a different team.
Cleveland, Freddie Kitchens.
Right, different offense, not the same. You know, he falls in the draft and ends up in a place where, you know, it was suitable for him.
Right.
So I think it's a good thing. You know, I hated to see this happen to Tua, but he could fall in the lap of a team that really needs him, that has some key pieces in place, has a defense, and maybe – have a need for a quarterback. Sometimes it could be a blessing in disguise, and this may happen for this kid. He's a great kid.
Yeah. By the way, Indy's got the 22nd pick. Chargers have the 12th. Carolina's 18th. Yeah. Let me tell you something. You put Tua with Christian McCaffrey because he's an incredibly accurate thrower, and those Carolina wide receivers and Greg Olson's like, I'm going to hold off on retiring in television for a year. Like, you put him in Carolina, you can just watch. You're like, oh, okay.
Right.
So let me let's move to this. Lamar Jackson. It's week 11, and they're healthy. They're hot. They're humming. He's smacking records everywhere.
Yes.
There is no question. I told you this yesterday. I watch Lamar, and I see you. What I also notice with him, Michael, he's getting better at throwing.
He's getting better in the passing game. That's for sure.
Let's talk about that. So you walk – now, I always thought you were a better natural thrower. You were a great deep ball thrower day one in the NFL. But did you feel like that when you got to the NFL – take me through the steps of what part of your game got better.
Yeah, early in my career, it was about pushing the ball down the field. And that's why my deep ball was better than my intermediate throws. And years 4, 5, and 6, the offenses started to change a little bit, the West Coast system, and I'm like – okay, it's going to be more shallow crosses. It's going to be more in cuts. I got to be more precise. And having a strong arm sometimes can you know, be a gift and a curse, you know, because now you chancing throwing balls in between defenders and you just putting everything into your arm strength and knowing that, look, I can fit a ball in. You're thinking Brent Favre style. And it hurts you in a sense. So, you know, the intermediate game became important later in my career, and trying to finesse throws and not trying to throw everything hard, because hard balls get tipped, and then they get tipped and get intercepted, and I've been, you know, victim of that so many times. So it was all about precision passing as I got older, and I like what Lamar's doing now because he don't have the strongest arm, but it's accurate, and he don't have to put velocity on everything that he throws.
No, he's got a – by the way, you know, people have said he's Kaepernick. Kaepernick, to this day, never had touch. Lamar's got touch.
He got touch, yes.
He can put the ball over the linebacker in front of the safety. Do you worry when you watch him? Oh, because he took a shot yesterday.
Yeah. He took a shot on the scramble. And I'm like, see, that is what's going to be the determining factor in year 4, year 5, year 6. And when I was in my second year – look, I had 2 shoulder injuries. I had both of my, like, thumbs were swollen on both hands, throwing hand.
Were those from hits?
Just from hits, just from contact. But I kept playing through it. And being young, you can sustain those injuries and you can keep going.
You heal faster.
You heal faster. And as you get older, you know, Lamar will start to, you know, be more conservative and take care of himself throughout the course of the game. I think he's done a great job of that so far.
Yeah.
But if this offense doesn't change, he's going to be required to do the same things that he's been doing now over the next couple of years.
Never forget, early in your career, you went to cold Green Bay and beat the Packers.
Yeah.
And Lamar is going to go to cold New England potentially, and that could be his signature win early in his career. When Lamar now is kind of the talk of the NFL. When you were bursting into the NFL, and there was about a 2-year period, Michael Vick was at the tip of everybody's tongue. Did it overwhelm you? Do you think Lamar does he understand how big of a deal he is right now in the league?
Yeah, I think he will understand it. He'll look back at the history from guys that came before him. And like you said, and I referenced what you was talking about with Tua, you know, your contract money really don't come into your second and third contract, but you got to get to that second contract. So all my motivation was in getting through year 1, year 2, year 3, year 4, and making sure that those were the best years of my career, and that money wasn't the objective. It was more about being consistent and playing good football and being the best quarterback that I can be. So that overrode everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just let everything else fall into place.
Yeah, I find Lamar incredibly likable, not divisive, fun, likable, getting better. Yeah. I think we forget sometimes, guys walk into this NFL, Tom Brady's first 3 years in the league, he was not the Tom Brady against Atlanta in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Like, Dak is clearly better today than a year ago.
Yes.
You can watch Dak at the – yeah, let's talk about the Cowboys. I watch Dak at the line of scrimmage now, and this is something I pay attention to.
Total control.
So when he's pointing, what is he doing?
He's probably pointing out defenders, pointing out who's going to blitz. You know, he could be miking, you know, changing the protection. That's probably what it is most of the time.
He does this now. He didn't do this 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he does this a lot.
He's recognizing what's about to happen. He's just informing everybody of, you know, what play needs to be called or what has to happen.
Do you, you know, we guys like me have been critical. He doesn't throw a pretty ball. As a thrower, what do you see when you watch Dak?
Precision. You know, I don't see him forcing a lot of balls. I think he's very accurate. I think he puts the ball in places where only his receivers can get it. You don't see a lot of balls getting tipped or batted away. And he's done it, you know, since he stepped behind the center for the Dallas Cowboys. And that's one of the things I admired about him. I think his first pass I ever seen him throw was like a seam to a slot receiver up the sideline, and like his first pass in the preseason game against the Rams years ago. And I was like, this guy got touch. And he's continued to show that over and over and over again. And when you're an offensive coordinator and you see a guy who can, you know, take control of a game with his arm, I mean, it's exciting. You know, it gets an offensive coordinator, you know, excited about what he can present to this guy week in and week out.
Yeah, and by the way, they do have some really – Michael Gallup, Randall Cobb, Amari Cooper. The weapons are good. That helps. I want to talk a little bit about New England. So, you know, Tom Brady was grumpy after the game, and I noticed last night we love to blame quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But New England's a mess at left tackle, and Tom is just, get rid of it. Was there ever a moment in your career, because I'm watching Brady last night, you could see he's visibly frustrated. Right. He's got young receivers and a mess at left tackle. Was there ever a moment in your career where there was an offensive lineman you didn't trust? In your head, ball snapped. Because I look at Brady last night and I'm like, oh, he doesn't trust the left tackle at all.
In 2012, Philadelphia, I just got beat up. It was musical chairs with the offensive line. Jason Peters was out, so he was my left tackle.
And good.
And I can't even remember who the replacement was. You know, no disrespect to that guy, but, you know, that was my concern. And I just remember playing against the Detroit Lions and the Ndamukong Suh, and, you know, he had a bunch of guys, Nick Fairley and all those guys, and they just – you know, kind of ran through our offensive line. It was a rough day for me, but
did you get into your head?
I was super grumpy after the game as well.
So when you were in the middle of that game, you knew coming out of the huddle.
Yeah,
I can't block him.
Can't block him. I'm gonna get beat up. I came into that game knowing that I was gonna get hit, knowing that I was gonna be the guy who had to stand tall back there and get punished. But I was willing to do it for, you know, the sake of my team. It wasn't the best feeling afterwards, but, you know, I felt good about stepping up. Now, we didn't win the game. We lost in overtime.
But you knew when you had your oatmeal in the morning.
Yeah, I knew when I was eating breakfast. When I woke up, it was like, here we go again. Let's do it.
Because I watched Brady last night. He doesn't have a deep threat. Do you think Gronk's going to come back? We watched him yesterday here at Fox. He now looks like an art curator. He doesn't look like a blocking tight end.
Yeah, he don't look like a blocking tight end.
He's kind of skinny.
He looked really good in his suit yesterday.
Didn't he?
Yeah, it was fitted. I think he's looking forward to the next phase of his career. I don't see him coming back, but New England always goes through this phase every year, I think.
What is that?
Where the offensive line gets banged up, they lose a guy, and they force Tom to just change his game, force the offense to look different, and the ball comes out quick. And I think this helps them in the long run because it trends all the way to the Super Bowl, which they get to every year,
right?
Pretty much, and they have their woes, but they always find a way to overcome it. And I'll never doubt the things that the New England Patriots can do, you know, with all the guys that they have within that building.
Yeah, they got six more regular season games. Then you've got a bye. They've got young receivers, Jacoby Myers, N'Keal Harry, and they're mostly healthy right now. So my gut is they're 9-1. AFC, New England or the field in the AFC?
Yeah.
I'd probably take New England. Mike Vick, great talking to you, bud.
Thank you.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It takes you a while. Welcome back in the NFL to kind of figure out teams. And, you know, the more I watch San Francisco, I was thinking last night, the more I watch San Francisco, the less I like San Francisco. And then it sort of hit me. Is that San Francisco is two teams. When they're facing a pocket quarterback, they're one team. When they're facing a mobile quarterback, they're another team. And so they start the year and they play an Andy Dalton and a Mason Rudolph and they play a Jared Goff and they play and then a Kyle Allen and that, and you're like, wow, that defense is unbelievable. And then the last 3 weeks they've faced Kyler Murray twice and Russell Wilson twice, and you're like, I see. This is what San Francisco is. They're, first of all, offensively, they miss George Kittle. He's kind of the Gronk to New England, George Kittle is to San Francisco. They can still score without him, but Gronk kind of defined on big moments the Patriots last several years. George Kittle really defines who San Francisco is. They're a lot fuzzier offensively when he's not playing. But if you look at the schedule for San Francisco, so the next 2 weeks, they face Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. And the Niners' defense is not going to look as great. And then they face Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and Jared Goff. And their defense is going to look great. And then they've got to go to Seattle, and they've got to face Russell Wilson. And their defense won't be as great. Is it San Francisco's one of those teams? The way their defense is set up, if you're a pocket quarterback and you don't have an elite O-line, good luck. But I think Dallas could play them. I think Baltimore. I think Green Bay. I think Arizona's given them trouble twice. I think Seattle. Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. There's a way to beat San Francisco. And the more I watch them, the more vulnerable they become. If your quarterback can move, you got a real shot. You're going to put up 24, 25 points. I mean, Kyler Murray's given him headaches the last two times he's faced him. He's got nothing to work with. He's got a rookie head coach. He's got a bad O-line. I mean, they're really a rebuilding team. And I'm watching yesterday, and I'm like, listen, San Francisco's defense, you know, it's the Mike Tyson quality. I always felt this about Mike Tyson. If you had a reach, if you were big, and you could be an average fighter, Mitch Blood, Green, Trevor Burbick, if you didn't have a reach advantage, Mike Tyson was a pit bull on a beach ball. But if you were long, Buster Douglas, Larry Holmes, you could keep Mike away. You could jab him and frustrate him. That's San Francisco. When you got that moving quarterback, you force them to be honest. They can't pin their ears back. If you have a pocket quarterback, they are Mike Tyson in their prime. They're just going to engulf you and humiliate Kyle Allen and Baker Mayfield and Jared Goff. And it's like, oh, you got to cover your eyes. It's horrible. But over the next couple of weeks, watch the next 2 weeks. Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson are going to move around against this offensive line. Russell Wilson will in the last week. Then it's Breeze, Matt Ryan, and Jared Goff. Good luck. Thanks for flying United. Those guys will get buried. All right, here's the other thing. So after Thursday night, a lot of people were saying, oh, man, a Cleveland Browns. Holy smokes, a Cleveland Brown. Playoff, playoff. By the way, the NFC equivalent of the Cleveland Browns this morning is the Chicago Bears. 4-6 and a number 10 seed. Do you think Chicago's a playoff team? Why do you think Cleveland's a playoff team? Cleveland's season ended yesterday because the teams they needed to lose all won. They're not winning their division over Baltimore. Can we all admit that in Cleveland? I mean, I know you're delusional, but we can all admit Baltimore's going to win the division. So Cleveland now is racing for the wild card spot against Indianapolis, Buffalo, and Oakland, and they all won. And Indianapolis is not only 6-4, but they've got a significantly better coach, a significantly better offensive line, and Jacoby Brissett is back. Indianapolis has a 2-game lead over Cleveland, and the better coach, the better O-line. Oakland is now 6-4. They've got the better coach and the better offensive line, and they play the Jets next. And then there's Buffalo's now got a 3-game lead. They're 7-3 over you. And Buffalo, you're not catching them. They're not going on a 5-game losing streak, a 3-game losing streak. And so right now we know New England's winning their division. Baltimore's winning their division. And then, you know, for the record, the Jags and the Chargers have the same record as Cleveland. And I hear nobody nationally talking about the Chargers or the Jags. And I think both have better roster than Cleveland. Certainly the Chargers do. So I think yesterday was the end of the season. If Thursday night was not the end of the season for the Browns, yesterday was the end of the season. So we know this about Cleveland. They're not going to have Myles Garrett. So your best defensive player you're not going to have. You're 2 games back. The equivalent of you in the NFC is Chicago. And nobody considers Chicago even worth a discussion after last night. The difference is Chicago just lost. You just won on Thursday. But the season's over. You got to face Baltimore. You're not winning it. Good luck in Arizona with Kyler Murray without Myles Garrett. You still have one of the bottom five coaches in the league. You're still the most penalized team in terms of yards in the NFL. And all the teams you're chasing won yesterday. Raiders now have the Jets. They're 6-4. They're going to win that game. And Buffalo's now got a 3-game lead. They won. And Indianapolis has Jacoby Brissett yesterday, and they tossed Jacksonville all over the field. So they're not going anywhere. And season over officially. I know, The media's got you. And for the record, Houston is also 6-4. We know Houston is better than Cleveland. They lost. I still think they'll win their division. I think Baltimore's just in a spot now where they're humiliating Seattle, they're humiliating New England, they're humiliating Houston. You don't want any part in week 11 of the Baltimore Ravens. Just like you didn't want any part of San Francisco in the first 6 weeks, you don't want any part of them. You don't want any part right now of Baltimore that's starting to remind me of the Cam Newton Panthers that made the Super Bowl. It's not just they're unique. It's not their veteran coach. There's a certain psychology and emotional avalanche here building in Baltimore where they feel like they are about ready to knock you out about seven punches into the fight.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
We do it every Monday at this time. We call it Colin Right, Colin Wrong. I'm a lot of both. I'm opinionated. Sometimes I whiff. When I do, I need to be called out. And on a Monday, once again, here we go.
Where Colin was right?
Well, I said all year with, and this is why I didn't jump too much on the Cleveland bandwagon. I said, Freddie Kitchens is a rookie head coach, and you got a lot of big personalities and a lot of young players on Cleveland, and now Myles Garrett is out for the year. This team has an issue. No discipline. And it was the number one thing I worried about. Frankly, I'm not alone. It was the number one thing most of us worried about. But it's ironic that Myles Garrett, their most athletic defensive lineman, is the one guy they need against Lamar Jackson in a must-win game, and they won't have him. And I don't think they're going to beat Arizona in Arizona without Myles Garrett chasing Kyler Murray. They are what we thought they were, undisciplined, and a head coach that can't handle all their young talent.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Lakers, I thought, would be an interesting team by about April. They are way better much sooner than I thought. LeBron's playing 35 minutes, looks energized, playing with incredible passion. They're 11-2, best record in the NBA. They are the number one defensive team, and their offense has been seamless. Some of this is just LeBron's taken over at point. 25 points, 11 and a half assists a game. He makes everything work. But I'm struck by how easy it is. Kuzma fits in, Danny Green, Dwight Howard fits in. All the pieces fit. Lots of length. They can run or go situational half court. And it's much, much smoother, much earlier than I thought.
Where Colin was right?
I said this during training camp. This is not Zeke's team. It's Dak's team. This is Dak's team. Zeke is a really good running back, but I've seen him lose all sorts of games when Zeke runs for 140 yards. Yesterday, Zeke didn't do anything, and they won on the road. Dak threw for over 400 yards, 440 yards. This is what I've been saying from day one. Zeke's a really good running back, but you can take Zeke out of this team and give me Nick Chubb, give me Melvin Gordon, and it would be the same football team. You take out Dak and replace him with Phillip Rivers, it's not the same team. Or replace him with Baker Mayfield, it's not the same team. This is Dak's team. He's getting better. He's an adult. I think we're watching a young man blossom in front of our eyes. His accuracy has improved. His pre-snap reads, clearly, if you watch the Cowboys play, have improved. And yesterday is another example. It's not Zeke's team. What I said during the holdout. I'd pay him, but don't go crazy on this stuff because they need Tyron Smith and Amari Cooper as much as Zeke, and yesterday proved it.
Where Colin was wrong.
I don't know. Am I wrong on Kirk Cousins? I guess I am. He overcame a 20-0 deficit. I guess I mean, yes, he's completing 71% of his throws. His passer rating's 115, 21 TDs, 3 picks. I guess I got to give it up. It feels like he's managing a lot of this stuff, and there's a lot of people wide open. I still don't kind of get it. I still think there are limitations in big games, but he's the only quarterback in the last 5 years that's come from behind a 20-0 deficit. He stayed poised, and he completes an absurdly high number. And, you know, I never really bought into it. I think he's the ultimate game manager. Case Keenum also won 13 games here, but at some point you start putting these numbers up, and data can be skewed, but a lot of this stuff is top of the league. If his name wasn't Kirk Cousins, wouldn't we be asking about MVP stuff? I mean, seriously, we would be. If it was anybody else, if Dak put up these numbers, we'd be like, yeah, Dak, you can put him in the MVP conversation. I guess I'm wrong on Kirk Cousins.
where Colin was right.
But I'm right on Tua at Alabama. My knock on him, and this was 2 years ago, I said he's a little smaller than I'd like. He gets super protection at Alabama, which he won't get in the NFL, and I worry about him always getting hurt. It's, once again, he's hurt. I saw this with Sam Bradford in college at Oklahoma. I liked him a lot, but I'm like, man, he gets dinged up easily. And I think Tua's becoming what I thought, which is kind of a mid-first round, you know, very good prospect, but he needs to go to an offensive line that can protect him and a team with a running game. And, you know, the injury stuff has always been my biggest concern. And once again this weekend, he gets hurt in a big game. That's kind of what he is. Let's not deny it. Let's get him healthy. And maybe opportunistically he falls to a Carolina or a Chargers, which is a better fit anyway because they won't rely on him as much.
Where Colin was wrong.
Houston Rockets have won 7 straight. I know. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. James Harden and Russell Westbrook I thought was enigmatic and problematic. Harden's the next Wilt Chamberlain. He's scoring like 40 a game. And Westbrook, to this point anyway, is fine with it. Westbrook's, you know, he's scoring 20 and Harden scoring 40. I still think defensively they got issues, and I think it's really early in the season. But they look good. They're working together. Westbrook's okay with his role. Still shooting too many threes for my taste. But so far, so good. Harden, Westbrook working, and the Rockets have won 7 straight.
Where Colin was right.
Initially out of college, I worried about Kyler Murray. But by week 2, I pivoted and said, no, this is real. I'm telling you, this kid's good. This kid, unlike Lamar Jackson, who moves around, this kid doesn't have anything to work with. This reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson. And we didn't buy Russell Wilson until year 3. This kid's completing 65% of his throws with a bad offensive line, with a passer rating over 90, 14 touchdowns, 5 picks. And again, he's doing it with nothing here. He doesn't have the coach that we think John Harbaugh is. He doesn't have the offensive line. It works. He's given San Francisco fits. Now, again, he comes out, took a 16-0 lead, and then they just don't have any players. I mean, he's having a kind of – they're doing a really good job in Arizona of coaching this team up. They're like Miami. They give you everything they've got. They just don't got much. But Kyler Murray's a real deal. I pivoted early, and I think you're looking at there's a lot of Russell Wilson here. No question, a lot of Russell Wilson.
Where Colin was wrong.
Deshaun Watson got rolled over by Lamar Jackson. I thought Deshaun just held the ball too long. I didn't think he made very good decisions. No points in the first half has never happened to Deshaun Watson. Lamar looked more comfortable. And this was also Deshaun had a fumble. I just don't think he played particularly well. He got sacked 6 times. That didn't help. But in the matchup, which I thought was going to be Deshaun showing everybody in the world, he's still a notch above. He got overwhelmed by Lamar. Lamar was more accurate. Lamar looked more poised. Lamar looked more athletic. And I was wrong on that.
Where Colin was right.
Celts have won 10 of 11. Best record in the East, and they are significantly better without Kyrie Irving. Last year it was Brad Stevens can't coach stars. Well, maybe he can't, but maybe Kyrie Irving's a pain in the butt because Brooklyn now is 5-7, and the Celtics are significantly better without him. Brooklyn's not as good even in the East with him, and it looks like to me what happened is what we thought would happen, is that Kyrie's just the flat earth guy. He's a lot of diva. He's hard to coach. He's an unbelievable ISO talent. Nobody would dispute that. But our takeaway is Kemba gets along with everybody. Kemba's 75 to 80% of Kyrie. He'll be a much better fit. And suddenly Brad Stevens, what do you know, knows how to coach again.
Where Colin was right.
Off a bye, New England was a pop gun offense. This is what they are. They don't have a deep threat. They need Gronk. I've said this since training camp. This Gronk retirement, there's a reason Bob Kraft keeps talking about bringing him back. I think you can win a bunch of games with New England. But I'm watching them yesterday, and this is basically my complaint, is that Belichick is so frugal that at some point he's driving Tom Brady crazy. They just don't have a tight end. He's got young receivers. They have a bad left tackle. And they were 5-for-16 on third down, 8 punts, 4.6 yards a pass. My concern about New England is come to reality. Now, I do think they get Isaiah Wynn back at left tackle. That part gets better. Brady gets less grumpy. But this is kind of what New England is this year. If it was not for a very uneven AFC, I would not think they're a Super Bowl team. But I think in the end, in the NFC, I don't think this would work. I think in the AFC, Baltimore's the only team that concerns me. But they needed a trick play yesterday to win. They needed Julian Edelman and a trick play to win yesterday.